It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to special episode 550 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great interview with Dan Panosian, an in-demand cover artist for Marvel and DC, and also who has done comics for Image, Dark Horse, Boom, and Dynamite, among others. He also does advertising work and design, as well as storyboard artwork for movie studios, commercials, and video games. He's currently got a Zoop.gg project called Dan Panosian Urban Barbarian Collected Works. It's going to conclude sometime on Thursday, but I wouldn't wait until then. I would support his good works and get on there at zoop.gg/urbanbarbarian as soon as you listen to this fun interview. We talk about his career and what he's been up to recently, as well as what he has in mind for the future. So I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this special episode 550, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Dan Panosian, a great creator who is known for his writing and his artwork and has extensive credits as a penciler and an inker. In fact, it's probably easier to name the companies you haven't worked for, Dan, than the ones that you have, because you've got a bunch of them.
Thank you.
You've got a project going on Zoop.gg, and it's called Dan Panosian Urban Barbarian Collected Works.
Yeah, we spent months and months trying to figure out a name, and you know, we gave it out to like study groups and did a lot of polling, and that's what we came up with.
Okay. Now, of course, I got to ask, where does Urban Barbarian come from?
That was a nickname given to me by a girl I dated, and it wasn't meant as a compliment.
Oh.
But you know what? I liked it, and it stuck, and so I was like, you know, there's something there.
Okay, well, you know, hey, as long as it works and you like it, that's the important thing.
I liked it, yeah.
Now, the book is described as an 8.5 by 11, 116-page hardcover, featuring covers, pinups, character designs, sequential pages, sneak peeks, zany commentary, and behind-the-scenes explorations of your greatest works to date.
That tracks. That sounds about right.
Yeah, that's what it says on Zoop.gg anyway.
Yeah, that's a good quote. I mean, that encompasses pretty much what we're doing and delivering to everyone's doorstep.
Now, as we're talking, of course, we're talking a little earlier, you have already passed your $10,000 goal.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Super excited. I think the more money the campaign makes, the more the people at Zoop are adding on as extras here and there, which is kind of cool, too.
Very good, very good. Now, how did you decide what to put in this book, or are you still putting it together?
I have parts of it already finished, and I've done two books prior to this one. This one's going to be a hardcover, and it's the first time I've ever done any sort of crowdfunding. But what I do is I go in and I look at, you know, since the last book was published, like what's new, what's exciting, what do I still like, you know, because as an artist, sometimes, you know, 2-3 weeks go by or a couple months go by and you look at something you've drawn and you want to fix it and change it. So, you know, it has to pass that test. And if it does, it makes it in the book. If it doesn't, it's time for the round file.
Okay. All right. So that's a good thing to be able to make those kinds of changes. Yeah. I was reading on the ultimate source of all knowledge on the internet, Wikipedia, which is always right, we know. And there was a thing in there that I had to ask you about. Sure. It says that at age 14, you sent an art submission to Marvel Comics, which was responded to with encouragement by the submissions editor, Len Kaminsky.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, we're true so far. That's good. Years later, he showcased his work at the New York Comic Convention, my favorite. and comic book artist Neil Adams and Walt Simonson took notice.
Yeah.
And you were offered a position as ad agency continuity graphics, and Simonson called his editor Ralph Macchio at Marvel Comics, and soon you were working for both companies, not just one.
Yeah, and DC as well, shortly after. So, you know, fresh off the plane and into the arms of this comic book company. It's pretty nice story.
How did you juggle all that? I mean, that sounds like a lot of work.
In the beginning, I was just given, short stories. And I was really fast. I was mostly doing inking. I was trying to get them to hire me to do penciling. And they would. They would occasionally give me a backup story to do, or a cover or a pinup. But for the most part, I was inking other artists. So since I was 14, I'd been kind of working daily. So it helped my speed quite a bit and my confidence in what I did. And my inking was far superior to any sort of penciling I could do at the time.
Now it says here on Kaminsky's wall was a thank you illustration sent from 14-year-old Dan Panosian. So,
he's just good business. He had written me back at age 14. There was a thing called the Marvel Tryout Book, and I sent in my samples, and they liked them enough. And I think they thought I was a little older than I was. And they're telling me that, you know, here's the pay scale, here's what you can expect from health insurance, and so on and so forth. And so, I had to write back and say I was a little underage, but, looking forward to meeting him, and thank you for looking at the stuff. And I think Len Kaminsky must have thought, well, isn't that, you know, kind of cute? You're some fan who might hopefully one day grow up to, you know, be an artist for us. So a lot of the editors had stuff up on the walls. I was just surprised that made the cut. So it was kind of nice to see.
Little did he know.
Yeah, little did he know. And then I worked with him, and he hired me later to work with him on Quasar. I was inking Mike Manley at the time, and that was right before Greg Capullo went on the title of Quasar. And then that job landed him a job on X-Force, and he really, you know, sprang into everybody's radar right then and there.
Wow. So, according to this, you worked on backup features for Captain America, Batman, Spider-Man, and Thor, and you ended up with X-Men as a regular inker.
Yeah, that was really something. It was kind of fast-tracked. Scott Williams and Jim Lee and Will Spartaceo were all kind of taking the world by a storm, and I was like a very early adopter at Marvel of the style. I mean, you know, like most artists, you have a signature style, and the same goes for inking. And I was relatively new at Marvel, and I was fascinated by this style that became the house look for the X-Men for decades. And Scott Williams can't ink everything. So they're like, who can ink like this? And I think at Marvel, I was the first guy that really adopted it. So I got a lot of work as a result of it. At DC Comics, Art T. Bear was inking in a similar vein, and they brought him over to Marvel Comics, and he was inking a lot of stuff at Marvel with X-Men.
Wow. So you started out strong. And then, according to this, it says, when Marvel's top artistic talents left to form Image Comics, you were asked to join them and begin illustrating comics that sold around 1 million copies each month.
This is true.
Wow. How'd that come to be? Did they knew you already from what you were doing?
Well, I had worked with Rob Liefeld on X-Force. He was getting ready to start Image, and he called me up. And at the same time, Mark Silvestri had called me up. He was working on Wolverine at the time. So they were familiar with my work. And like I said, there weren't too many guys who were pushing that finished look the way I was. So there's only a handful of guys. So I got offers from Wildstorm and Image, and Rob offered me, he said, how would you like to pencil this and ink this new book, Prophet? So I ended up doing an issue for Mark Silvestri, inking over him, which was an amazing opportunity. At the same time, I had kind of signed up to ink some Spawn, which happened to be Greg Capullo's first work on Spawn, his first issues. And I was also drawing Prophet for Rob Liefeld. And still maintaining my relationship with the X-Men office and inking John Romita Jr. at the time. So it was a very, very busy time, but it was super exciting. And I moved out to California and we trained a bunch of brand new anchors at Extreme Studios that are some of the top anchors working in the industry today.
Wow. Wow. Now, of course, here it also says that you did work for Dark Horse, Boom, and Dynamite.
And yeah.
You illustrated a series of graphic novels for Le Lombard, and I'm sure I'm butchering that, called John Tiffany.
Yeah, that was a great. I just love European graphic novels. They're bigger. The genres are a little bit broader than just superhero. And John Tiffany is written by a writer who worked with an artist that I greatly admired, Enrico Marini. I still admire. The guy's amazing. He just did a Batman series for DC, but he continues to do his own projects in Europe.
I have to join you on that one. I love the European graphic novels.
Yeah, right.
For a while, Marvel printed a bunch of those, and I have just about every one I could find and buy. I have here because I like them, but I still buy them. Occasionally, I hear something that I'm really interested in. There was one about a polar bear, a senior polar bear and a young polar bear going around up in the north. And I said, gosh, I've got to see that story. And so yeah. I ended up buying the book, and I really love it. So you won't get that in DC Marvel, sadly.
No, I mean, they have their main characters, the bread and butter, and that's why you go to those. That's why we buy DC Comics or Marvel Comics. They're not, they don't venture out too much, and they won't do a period piece, or they're not gonna, I mean, really, they're not going to do anything that isn't superhero related. For a little while, they had that great label Vertigo, which was books like 100 Bullets. You had Dave Johnson doing the covers, Brian Azzarello writing, you know, a masterpiece, and a talented artist also from Europe, kind of doing European work, was Eduardo Risso, who's just spectacular. He's you know, like an artist. Everyone in the art community just, you know, you flip out when you look at his work. So, Vertigo did some great stuff, but there's not really opportunities at the big two to do anything like that, which is why a company like Image Comics and even Boom and Dark Horse have appeal to a lot of creators.
Yeah, there's a book that was originally done overseas called The Killer. They have a current miniseries going on The Killer. The same creators are doing it for somebody under Boom Studios. And I've been after that. I ordered all six issues, and of course, my store did not get the sixth issue.
No, you need that sixth issue.
I said, you got to get that for me. I'm sorry, I have to have that. So I'm after it. Of course, they'll probably collect it, and I'll probably get the collected edition as well. But my biggest trouble with European graphic novels is my language skills aren't as good. So I'm always looking for ones that are translated into English really well. So I'm doing all those kinds of things. But I love all that stuff. I love different kinds of storytelling. So I love my superheroes, but I also love different kinds of stories. A polar bear, a senior polar bear with a young polar bear. That I was like, I got to read that. That sounds so different to me. So I really like that. So, but anyway, according to Wikipedia, that's not all that you've done. You also founded Dan Panosian Incorporated, through which you started doing advertising work.
Yeah.
How did you do that? How did you fit that in with all the other comic stuff? Did you kind of leave comics behind or what?
I did. I left comics behind for a little while after my dad passed away. And then I he was in advertising himself. So I wouldn't call necessarily what I did. It was kind of commercial artwork. I was designing toys. I was designing video game characters. Doing storyboards for TV commercials. And it's just, there's so many opportunities out in California. You have Hollywood and you have a lot of video game companies and you have toy manufacturers. So it was a perfect storm to do stuff outside of comics. And the industry had changed a great deal in just a little less than a decade. It went from skyrocketing sales that forged what had become the Image Comics, but sales started to plummet when people realized, if you print a million copies of X-Men number one, that they're not going to be worth that much.
Right.
So, which is cool. What makes it cool about variants today, because variants with a legitimate small print run truly are collectible, and that's what makes it fun. But yeah, I got out of it for a bit, and gave me a lot of experience and confidence to pencil more. I hadn't, all I had really done was pencil profit and some other little things and covers here and there. But you know, my dream was to write and draw comic books, and with the skill set I had at that point before I left comics, I don't think that was going to happen. Or if it did, I don't think I would have had much success at it. So, doing storyboards all day gave me confidence. I started attending like life drawing sessions. And so instead of just going, how would, you know, so-and-so artist that I love, draw this, you legitimately have to replicate what you see in front of you. And it's a whole different animal. It teaches you to, really draw. So, that really helped me. And, when I got back into comics, I started just doing the whole job myself. I started coloring myself, and, I got a great opportunity with Robert Kirkman's company, Skybound, which is a studio within Image Comics. And he let me write, pencil, ink, color my own book called Slots.
Oh, wow.
I had done a bunch of Marvel projects and DC stuff here and there, but nothing regular. I didn't have a regular book. And that kind of launched things for me to move forward. And now, you know, I finished up An Unkindness of Ravens for Boom Studios, where I wrote it. I did the covers and flashback sequences, but we had a great artistic team with Mariana Ignazzi and Fabiano Mascalo, the colorist, who did a beautiful job. And now we're just finishing up Alice Ever After. And it's the same sort of thing, except in this case, the penciler is Giorgio Spallotta, who's a very talented guy and makes my writing look good, and super excited about that book.
Well, I always have to ask people who do multiple types of artwork and comics and stuff like that, if there's one that you favor. And, you know, people always tell me, well, I'm a storyteller, so I like it all. But and I get that, but you started out as an inker. Did you kind of get your fill of that? Now you're into the other, you know, the drawing more. What kind of thing, if somebody says to you, do what you want to do, what do you want to do?
Well, I have to agree with everybody else. I mean, my dream, you know, I was influenced, you know, my career is influenced by guys like Simonson and John Byrne and Frank Miller and Joe Kubert and John Buscema and Paul Severin, these guys who would do everything. They tackle every aspect of the job. And so that's what I want to do. But as far as the easiest thing for me is certainly the inking, because it's just, you know, it's second nature. I don't have to think about, oh my gosh, how do I interpret this line or what do I do here? There's no hesitation whatsoever. When it comes to penciling, you know, it's a lot of, that's why they have an eraser on a pencil. So, you know, there can be some back and forth and some discovery, and you know, it's fun too, but that can be pretty exhausting. And coloring is the latest discipline that I've tried to attack. And, you know, you have every color in the rainbow to choose, and you have to, and how to apply it. And just like, you know, there's styles to coloring, just like there's styles to penciling and inking. So it's fun in that way.
I got to ask, because I'm always intrigued. One of the great things about using paper is that you can always sell it. I mean, if you come across the time you need some extra money, people are always interested in the original artwork. If you use a computer and you print it out, it's not nearly as worth. It's not what people are willing to pay for as much as paper. Do you use the computer at all, or do you stick to paper?
Well, I draw it on paper, and then I color it using this program called ArtRage. And then I take those files and throw them into Photoshop, and I hit a magic button, and I just hope for the best.
Because I was talking with Wendy Pini a long time ago, and we got into a discussion about using the computer, and we were saying that one of the greatest things that you were talking about in Eraser, one of the greatest functions somebody ever came up with was the undo button.
Yeah, that's a great button. That's one of my favorites.
Even though I'm not really an artist, I still use the undo button a whole lot, and whoever did that needs to get it. I hope they got a huge payment or a benefit. Yeah. For doing that. Cause wow, that is that's why a lot of people go completely computer these days is because they say they can do that. But
well, I think it's faster, but in my case, I don't think it necessarily is because the problem with that is that you can keep zooming in and you can get lost in the detail. And even from a digital standpoint, you're only looking at the stuff so large. And when it comes to a physical comic book or any kind of printed media, the size is what it is. So sometimes you see digital art and I don't think they're saving much time at all. In fact, I think they, in retrospect, one day they might regret it a little bit. Also, you don't have anything physical to sell.
Yeah.
You know, there's the whole aftermarket. There's a lot of people that really want to, you know, their favorite book or favorite cover, and they want some pages from the inside or a cover to collect it. So the digital art is sort of missing out on that a little bit. But I'm not going to tell them what to do.
Well, I know somebody who is a total digital artist, and he cannot make that extra money because everything is on the computer and nobody wants a printout.
Yeah, well, there's a few artists that are trying to figure out ways around that. And hopefully they find a way because digital art and physical art, it's still artwork. And it's these there's so many digital artists that do magnificent things.
Yeah, that's how do you do that, though? How, you know, because
essentially you can either do an NFT of the artwork, which kind of guarantees that it's a one of one, or in some cases an edition size, or you just have to kind of create your own digital authentication stamp saying, I will not reprint this thing. This is a one and done, and maybe burn the file. I don't know.
I hate to do that because what if somebody else comes along and wants to pay for
stuff that later? It's like, you know, let's say you're Leonardo da Vinci and you've painted a picture of a, a semi-attractive woman and a friend of yours named Mona, and you sell it to some land baron or pope or what have you, and he sells it to his friend across the way. You'll never see a dime of that. So that's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, that's sadly true.
That's bad. Makes me.
Yeah. Now, we've talked about your artwork, and you also listed with credits as a writer. What things have you written that you're particularly proud of?
I'm proud of everything I've written. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but I have a special affinity for slots. I really like the character Stanley Dance in that. But I there were some nice things going on in Kindness of Ravens, and who knows, Boom might revisit that one day, but there's a whole world built out there. And right now I'm working on a few other books that I can't talk about, but we just wrapped up Alice Ever After. I finished the final issue maybe a month or two ago, and I really love it. I love it because it's a dark story, but there's also, you know, it's Alice and it's, so there's some humor to it, which I get a kick out of.
That's great because I'm always interested in artists who write as well as writers who draw, because they somehow, I think if you're a person who understands the visual aspects of comics and television and movies, you can do a better job of writing something than somebody who doesn't. Because you think visually along those lines. And so for me, I'm always I've seen people who like write movies and suddenly they go to draw comics and they do such a good job because they understand how this is going to look when it hits the page.
Yeah. They have some kind of strange vision.
Yeah. Well, they can visualize what's going to happen when it hits the page.
Yeah. That's an interesting process I'm dealing with now. So I'll write a page, say of Alice Ever After, and I know how I would draw it. And then I'll get it back from the artist, Giorgio Splatta. I'm like, oh my God, I'm glad he drew it because, you know, this is so much better. Or I really didn't see it from this angle. So it's kind of a fun process and you can be pleasantly surprised. Hopefully you're pleasantly surprised.
Well, it's always the case because I help with an indie comic. And when we were out shopping for an artist, we gave them a character from the book for people to draw. And we saw some of them were just very standard. You know, looking them, this one hit us, and we went, "Holy smoke! Look at how great that is!" And he ended up drawing the book, And it's interesting how, and I always talk to art, to writers, and when they get the art pages back from an artist, they will see something that they didn't conceptualize. They see it on the page, and it changes the story a little bit because that gives them an idea that they can build into the script.
Mm.
Do you ever, have you run into that?
Yeah, I liked, Giorgio surprised me. He named the asylum that Alice goes to, which was a nice touch. I mean, that was, that's just one tiny little example of a surprise. It was kind of cool. And I was like, oh, that's a great name, Sacred Hearts. you know, it kind of ties in with the Red Queen, the Queen of Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, it's Mistress Hulda, and she is the administrator there at the Sacred Hearts Asylum.
Wow, that's great, because there's something about that collaboration that I think that if people are, they're completely solo on these things, they don't get that kind of inspiration if they do it themselves. And so I like it when there's more than one person. There are people who are script writers who only want to write their own script and they don't want any kind of input. But yeah. I see people who gather around a table like a writing staff, and they will bounce ideas off, and what comes out to me is always so much better than, say, one of them had done it. Although it'd probably be very good. Those great ideas that hit them because of the creative process of working with others, I just think it's a great thing.
Yeah, no, that's what's wonderful about comics as opposed to, say, just a novel. It's really cool.
So do you still do like advertising artwork and storyboard and stuff like that? Or do you?
I get offers all the time, but every time I do something like that, unless the pay is outrageous, it's taking me away from either writing or drawing. So my goal, it's not a job. It's a career. And I think there's a difference. And, you know, I want a career in comic books. So I want to put as much of myself as I can into that venue.
So the Alice Ever After, that you've said you finished that first one up. Do you have more in mind for Alice Ever After, or is that going to kind of wrap up that story?
I do. I have a follow-up sequel in mind. So we'll see what Boom thinks. You know, I had a lot of ideas for a follow-up for Alice, Unkindness of Ravens, but they were like, well, what else do we have here? We want to keep working with you. And this one, Alice Ever After, according to Boom, exceeded their sales expectations. So that's a great sign moving forward. So who knows? There might be, you know, I hope there will be more Alice Ever After in the future.
Alice More Ever After. Fingers.
Yeah.
And more of the Ever After of Alice. So
more.
Yeah. So that's great. So how many issues were in that first Alice Ever After, by the way?
Five. And the issue number four is out right now. And by the time, I don't know, you mentioned this podcast may come out later. So I imagine middle of August, the final issue will come out.
What about a trade? Are they going to collect it into a trade by any chance?
Yeah. Everything they do, they'll collect into a trade. All these companies do. The trade will probably come out, you know, 4 to 6 months later afterwards.
Okay. Now, the way that I read the Zoop.gg, this is one thing I've got to make sure I tell Jordan sometime. When it says there's a certain number of days left, my math skills are not that good. So I have to look at a calendar and think, now, when is that actually going to end? And the way that I calculate yours, I think it's going to be about August 25th for the Zoop.gg thing to conclude. Now, I wouldn't wait that long. Don't wait until we get to the end. Get on there and do like everybody else has already done. Jump in there and support it right now, because it's on the Zoop.gg page. Well, you want to have this good thing. Like I said, it's 116 pages.
It's a lot. I
can imagine that's just a start from all the things that you've got. You could probably do a Urban Barbarian Collected Works 2 if this goes well.
Yeah. Hopefully it does well. Like I said, I've never done one. You know, everybody has tried this, and it's a successful way to bring especially an art book, and even comics to a marketplace and reach fans. And so I'm super excited. to do this. And I'm very grateful that it's already, you know, it was funded in less than a day. So that was super cool.
Is this going to be like one of those coffee table type books?
Well, it's a hardbound book. I think it'll look good on any coffee table. It's 8.5 by 11, so it's not a small book. You know what we're going to do after this one is we're going to probably do some artist editions of Canary, which is a book that I'm not writing, that I'm just drawing with Scott Snyder. And it came out from Comixology. It's available now for free. And you can check it out. And then it's going to be collected from Dark Horse Comics as a graphic novel. They're going to put it all together. But the response online, you know, people really want to see an oversized printed edition of this, just the art, like in black and white. So we're going to probably deliver that in two volumes, two separate campaigns.
Wow. Well, Mr. Snyder does a tremendous job of writing. He did Batman. Yeah. That's where I first came into him. Of course, I'm a big Batman guy.
Did you read like American Vampires?
I did read that. That didn't resonate with me as well as Batman did.
Oh, well, even in Batman, there's a horror aspect to what Scott brings to it. And this is a horror Western genre. So it's pretty cool. And it's a really fun collaborative project. Scott, you know, a lot of times you run into these creators who have had so much success, these writers. And like you were mentioning before, they're not really interested in collaborating that much on the story. They have the story in their head already. And I'm certainly that way. But in this case, I got to say, Scott is, you know, very humble, very into these projects and very eager to hear, you know, it's not just me, any artist he works with, he has this great relationship where, man, you really get to push things. So Canary is something artistically I'm very, very proud of.
I haven't gotten to that yet. I'm going to have to sit down and read it once we get done, because I'm always interested in those kinds of stories. And it's just such a fascinating thing to be able to see. I am not a, as much as I love storytelling and stuff, if I came up with stuff, it'd be real generic, John.
Oh.
But I can tell people, I can tell if I read a story, that's what made that story great. That right there removed it there. But can I come up with that? Nope.
Oh.
So I just, all I can do is admire people who do those kinds of things.
That's
great. That's good that you guys can do that, because I've interviewed Scott a couple of times, and he is a great fun to talk with. And I always just, his Batman, I think, he and the Greg Capullo's Batman is a gold standard that,
oh yeah, they really left their mark on that together.
Yep, and to this day, I still think people have to live up to the stuff that they did, which is really great.
I mean, that's why I feel very fortunate. I'm working with one of the, you know, most celebrated authors in comic book history at this point. So it's pretty cool.
It's really great. So how did you get to do that, by the way?
Scott had like a lottery system where he's like, you could enter to win sort of thing. And I kind of rigged the system a little bit. I went to his house and he showed me he had like a huge fishbowl with all the names in there. And he said, would you like a drink or anything before we start talking and interviewing? And then as soon as he went to the kitchen, I emptied the entire thing out and threw it in the fireplace, which was magnificent, by the way. And the only thing remaining was my name.
Funny that.
Yeah, it's a little bit underhanded. I called some other people that probably deserved the job more than I did out of the way, but that's what happened.
Sometimes you got to do things to get where you want to go. And
yeah, no, I knew Scott for a while, and it just kind of organically happened. He was launching this great. He wanted to launch a bunch of different books in Comixology, and we decided together, you know, should we take this to Image? Should we take it to this publisher or that publisher? Should we go digital? And, you know, back and forth, we arrived at Comixology, and I'm happy we did. They're really great to work with, and it's great people over there. And we had a great experience where they hosted us for the San Diego Comic-Con over this weekend. And, we had a great time. It's nice to work with people you like and that are like-minded. It's fun.
That's true. It's if somebody you don't necessarily get along with, that gets to be a slow slog.
No, I'll bow out of that scenario. Life's too short.
Now, there's some interesting stuff on the Zoo Project. You've got an add-on that's a grab bag, a set of three signed variants. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm excited about that. So, you know, I do a lot of variant covers, and I always am sent the variant covers, and I'll look them up online a couple months later. You know, not all of them, obviously, but I'll look them up, and, you know, it's pretty incredible to see how these variant covers, how much they'll be going for on eBay or among collectors. So what I have a closet full of these things. So what we're going to do for that tier is I'm just going to grab some, sign them, and include them in that. So
that's cool.
Now what we get. But
some things have already you can't order anymore, even though we're talking early in the campaign.
Yeah, they sold out quickly. So hopefully, what's cool about Zoop is if we come up with another idea for something, we can add that. So we're already talking about. Maybe adding some special little extras until we actually decide what we're going to do. I don't want to announce it here and then it's not available on the campaign.
Right.
But there definitely will be more opportunities to add stuff on if you're interested in collecting additional materials.
Well, as we're talking, I look at it. You know, you have a certain number of things and then no more. But there's an $80 get the book plus a remark. And there was 40 in there, but it says 41 out of 40 have been claimed.
I brought this up with Jordan, and he laughed at me. He went to his like a hysterical, like almost how the Joker would laugh. And I go, the math seems a little funny on this. And he goes, you just draw things, okay, kid? And he goes, let me handle the numbers. No, I don't know. I saw that too. That might just be a glitch. I don't know. What that's all about necessarily, but we'll see.
Well, there's more than one of those though. There's another one.
11 next to it. I'm looking at right
11
now.
11 out of 10. Yeah, in the Collected Works Volume 1 for $30.
Yeah, hopefully, 11 of them weren't ordered. But I'll probably talk to Jordan today and I'll bring that up. But that's something that would be changed. I think that's kind of closed out right now. It says that's unavailable, so I imagine maybe it's just a problem.
Not a bad problem to have, though.
No, I like the selling out aspect. I mean, not with my, you know, with my morality or what the substance that makes me who I am, but certainly in this campaign.
Now that we're talking about the book itself, do you know any of the stuff that's going to be in there already? Can you tell some people what it is that you've got in there?
Yeah, so like I said, there's a ton of variant covers I do, and obviously not all of them are going to be in there because we'd need another maybe 100 pages, but I'm going to try to pick my favorites out of the variant covers, and it's from a wide breadth of different publishers, from Marvel to DC to Boom to Dynamite, smaller publishers too. There's going to be some process artwork for what I did in Canary, like developing these characters. Same goes for Alice Ever After, Slots, and Unkindness of Ravens, maybe even some John Tiffany stuff as well. I mean, pretty much everything I can kind of put in there that looks cool, I'm going to put in. Also, my favorite part is I have a live stream I do with Dave Johnson, Jeff Johnson, Joe Quesada, and Ben DeFeo. And every week that we do it, all of us draw something interesting, and it's great because we get to draw things that purely we just want to draw. And a lot of times something I'll draw on that live stream, Marvel or DC will use as a cover. So I'll be putting a lot of those drawings that you've seen, that if anyone's seen over the years, the drink and draw stuff, it'll be in there too.
Great. So you got over 100 pages in there. So this gives you quite a wide variety to choose from.
Yeah. And there's also going to be, like mentioned in the campaign, there's going to be some zany commentary. I like that description that Jordan put in there, zany commentary. Yeah. You know, a lot of art books are strictly art. But then you go to a bookstore and you might like looking up maybe Alphonse Mucha or whatever artist that you're crazy about. And they're going to there's going to be some commentary, basically like, oh, this was done for this publisher, or, you know, this was, the artist had this in mind when they were drawing this, that, and the other thing. In my case, it's a little bit of a Mad Magazine version of that. So don't expect a lot of keen insight, but there is insight.
What about, are you making sure that you get like a spread over the stuff that you've done over the years? Like not almost all Marvel, not almost all Image, stuff like that.
No, it's, I can't do all Marvel because then Marvel would want to strangle me. But you have to, it has to be like kind of a retrospective of the last few years. And, you know, there's been two books prior, so I don't want to repeat myself from stuff earlier on in my career. This is all the new and latest work.
Okay, very good. Are there other projects you're working on that you can talk about that we can mention while we're talking?
Well, right now I'm doing covers for Lord of the Jungle. It's a Tarzan series that Dan Jurgens is writing over at Dynamite. And I'm doing some covers for Suicide Squad. Right now, by the time this comes out, it'll probably be announced. So I'm doing a Poison Ivy variant cover, number one, of 1 of 25 variant. So that's going to kind of be fun. It's a great character. And I'm trying to think. I mean, the problem is, as of this moment, nothing's been announced. Like, I don't know when some of these things will be announced, but I've got a couple writing projects in the mix.
Cool. Yeah. I always like it when somebody says that they can't talk about everything, because that means things are in the process. If somebody tells me, well, I don't have anything going on right now, then I go, oops, that's not good. But
the interview like that end with a lot of tears.
Well, I like to, your artwork is really outstanding, and I think that's really great that you can do all the variety of stuff. I wish more creators could do that, because I think sometimes if somebody is just a writer, they get into a rut, you know, they want to only do cowboy stories, and so they do cowboy stories. Yeah. And then after a while, they start to kind of recycle some of those ideas, and you can't help it. But
Thanks. I'm a bit of a scatterbrain, Wayne. I don't know if you've noticed, but it's you know, it's like a Chex Mix. You know, you put your hand in a little box, you don't know what you're going to get out of pretzel, maybe a salty square cracker that has a, you know, bizarre flavor that you can't determine. That's kind of, I like everything.
That's good.
I'm a big fan of science fiction as far as like watching it or reading it. But as far as me drawing it or writing, I don't know if I'll go down that road, but I do like crime noir. There is some superhero stuff I like still. I like fantasy, and obviously I like westerns and horror. So it's usually those categories.
Sounds good to me. I like all those categories. So those are good fun. Very good. Now, if people want to keep up with what you're doing, are there social media outlets that you're on?
Yeah. You can find me at Urban Barbarian, one word, on Twitter and on Instagram, and I post pretty regularly. And it's just my name. If you go to Facebook, I don't have a fan page necessarily, but you can still follow someone, and it's the same thing. So I've been on there for a while, so there's no more room for friends on that platform, but you can't follow me there. But yeah, I'm on Twitter every day, maybe too much.
My problem with Twitter is if you do something and 10 minutes later it's gone, the thing slides past so fast, I can't keep up with it.
Oh yeah, totally. There's so much, depending on how many people you follow, your feed can go by like ticker tape, stock market.
Is there any projects you would like to do that you haven't done yet?
Well, I would, a little sad I didn't get to do a run of Conan or write any Conan while I was at Marvel, but you never know, coming up with Titan now heading that, I might get a chance. But I'm working on my own fantasy series, so I think, Conan... I love Conan. I love Savage Sword of Conan in particular, because it was always in black and white. And I was a big fan of John Buscema with Tony DeZugna inking him and doing finishes. But you know, it's hard to follow in those, you know, huge footsteps. So branching off and doing my take on that world what I'd want to do is really change it dramatically. So it's not like, oh, this looks like Conan with white hair. Right? I don't want to do that. I want to, you know, I feel like, oh, his family was killed when he was young. It's like, oh, he's, no, I don't want to, I'd have to do something dramatically different. So I don't want to just do something generic in that wheelhouse. I want to do something really fun.
See, that'd be fun, I think. I think that's kind of what Scott Snyder did with Batman. He went Court of Owls, and he went back and revisited his origin some, and mm-hmm. stuff like, no matter what he did, I was really interested in it. It tended to fill in some of the gaps and yeah. stuff. But I like a retelling. Sometimes I like something that goes a different place. Yeah. If we've kind of run out of stories in a certain area, let's go a different direction.
Yeah, I relaunch these characters. So, I mean, maybe one day I'll get to work on Conan. I am going to be doing covers for Titan, for Conan, because it's just one of my absolute favorite characters. Hence that name, Urban Barbarian. I try to live my life. What would Conan do? It's not as necessarily as kind as what would Jesus do, but, you know, what would Conan do?
Well, you need to thank the girl who gave you that nickname a long time ago.
Yeah, I would if she was still speaking with me.
Well, much success. Yeah. Zoop is already a big success for you. Hopefully we get to see a lot more from you doing those good things. And keep up the wonderful stuff. You're doing good stuff.
Thank you so much. And thanks for taking the time, Wayne. I appreciate it.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.